The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a good song. That's a fitting song. I like it. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, with you till 9 o'clock tonight, Logan Weber alongside Blake Schneiders. We're hearing a little You Are the Champions because a former Royals World Series champion, or a former Royal who was a World Series champion, that title never leaves you, is being inducted into the Royals Hall of Fame. And I'm sure most of you have seen the news already. Alex Gordon is going to be immortalized for all time in Royals history, as if he wasn't already. The Royals announced earlier this week that they were putting somebody in the Hall of Fame. They had like a little teaser video that they put out, and it was on, like, for anybody who's paid attention or watched the Royals in the last 15 years, like, I watched this, like, the, it was just like a picture or a video of the guy's legs walking down the hallway, and I'm like, that guy walks like Gordo. It's weird that I knew that, but I did. Alex Gordon's going into the Hall of Fame. And a exceptionally long career with Kansas City. After he was drafted second overall in 2005, he made his MLB debut in 2007. He was on the opening day roster in 2007. Played in 151 games that year and never looked back. He was with the team until 2020, playing 14 years in the blue and white. He was a three-time All-Star, all of which occurred in those sort of golden years of the Royals during his stretch, right? 2013, 2014, 2015. He won an astonishing 8 gold gloves. He was a 2-time platinum glove winner. He was a career 257 hitter, had 190 career homers, 749 ribbies. And I think by all intents and purposes, he had a Royals Hall of Fame level career. No question. He was a linchpin for those Royals teams. What he did in left field on a night-by-night basis was nothing short of a spectacle to watch. Did he always wow you with his ability at the plate? No, probably not. But a career 260 hitter, that's great. I mean, probably the best season of his career was in 2011. He hit .303 with a .376 on base percentage. He hit 23 home runs, 87 RBIs. He stole 17 bases that year, and he won a gold glove. He finished with 185 hits, which was the second most in a season in his career. He played in 151 games that year, so the hit numbers were a little bit skewed. It's just one of those things, and I hate it because we all look at it from the perspective of hindsight's 2020, right? Gordo goes second overall in that draft in 2005. Such a huge part. And I'm super excited for him that he's going to be a member of the Royals Hall of Fame. Ryan Braun went 5th in that draft. Troy Tulowitzki went 7th. Andrew McCutchen went 10th. And I hate that I'm doing this to you. I really hate that I'm doing it to myself also. Because again, baseball, you're throwing, especially the game of baseball, it is darts at a dartboard. The amount of misses in the game of baseball when a guy gets drafted and makes his way to the minors, and there are a lot worse stories. I mean, this is one that at least worked out and worked out pretty well for the Royals, right? He didn't have MVP sort of seasons like McCutchen or Ryan Braun did or Tulowitzki, but he was an incredibly serviceable player in Major League Baseball for a very, very long time. And he was the best glove that left field had in Major League Baseball for the entire duration of his 14 years.
Not 9-time gold glover?
Eight-time gold glover. 8 gold gloves, 2 platinum gloves in his career.
What he didn't give you maybe the offensive power numbers that they were maybe expecting, he made up for with his play in the field.
Oh, no question about it.
If you just go on YouTube, I'm sorry. If you just go on YouTube and type in Alex Gordon defensive highlights, it's nothing but cannons from the outfield, man. Just prime plays, assists left and right. How many times did he lead the league in assists, outfield assists? I mean, his defensive highlights are fantastic to watch.
Yeah, he was a fun player to watch. He really was. And you're right. He wasn't going to give you 20 home runs a year. He did it a couple of times, but he was never consistent in that respect. He wasn't going to give you 90 or 100 ribbies. Mostly because, you know, for a big bulk, you know, big massive portion of his career, weren't a lot of guys hitting in front of him that were going to get on base all that much. Okay. Outside of that 3-year stretch from 13 to 15, there wasn't a whole lot going on in terms of run production for the Royals at all, regardless of where Gordo was hitting or how Gordo was hitting.
I got to give credit to Jason here, too, because he did bring up the all time clutch Alex Gordon game tying home run against the Mets.
Yeah, that, I mean, that game,
which just propelled them to the champion, to the World Series.
That was game one. Like, him hitting that in game one set the stage. Firstly, they killed Matt Harvey in that series, derailed Matt Harvey's entire. I feel so bad for that man. Like, the only two things I didn't like about the Royals beating the Mets in that 15 World Series, the only two things, because other than that, I really enjoyed it. Number one, David Wright had to retire without a World Series ring. Because I was always a huge David Wright fan growing up. I loved watching him play the hot corner. And the fact that Matt Harvey was never the same after that. I don't think... Did Matt Harvey last another 3 years in Major League Baseball?
I was going to ask you. I think he was out of the league pretty shortly after that.
I mean, he was so good in the early part of his career with the Mets. I mean, he started out his rookie year... Bam, 2.73 ERA. The very next year, he was an all-star. He had a 2.27 ERA in 26 starts. He was an all-star. He finished fourth in the Cy Young voting that year. In 2015 with the Mets, he went 13-8 with a 2.71 ERA. The next year, a 4.86, a 6.7, a 4.94. Everything ended up downhill. He ended up with the Royals, if we remember that. Right, he was with the Royals in 2020, just like randomly. He pitched in 7 games, and they were like, "Now we're good. We've seen enough." And then he finished his career in 2021 with the Orioles. So the first 3 years of his career, all sub-3 ERAs. After that 15 World Series and the way he got shelled, he never had an ERA below a 4.86 again in his career. It killed his entire career. But yeah, so cool for Alex Gordon. And like I said, you can look at this draft class and yeah, there's names, right? Troy Tulowitzki, like I mentioned, Andrew McCutchen, Jacoby Ellsbury was in that draft, I think, too. Some really good outfielders. But is it as bad as the Luke Hochaver miss? Probably not. Is it as bad as the Bubba Starling miss? Definitely not. He gave you a lot, and he is absolutely a Royals Hall of Famer. Should be for a very long, very, very long time. Probably the best individual fielder in the history of the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, I would say it's basically up between him and Frank White.
Somebody in the text line, 913-586-7965, said he owns the Royals record for the most outfield assists in a season and all time. He also, in 1 year, that 2012 year, he had 51 doubles. It's a lot of extra base hits. 51 doubles in a year is a considerable amount of extra base hits. He struck out a lot, but he was never a guy that was hovering around 160, 180, 200 strikeouts a year. He was somewhere between 120 and 140 strikeouts every year. He generated 50, 60, 70 walks every year. Guy got on base, 340 career OBP. He got on base.
You know how people always talk about Ken Griffey Jr. having one of the sweetest swings in all of baseball?
Mm-hmm.
You know who had that? Even though it didn't really equate the way we wanted it to, Alex Gordon had one of the prettiest swings and finishes I've ever seen.
Oh, when he hit a no-doubter, it was a thing to behold.
It was beautiful.
As soon as he hit it, that bat was on the ground. He's got his hand behind his on his hip.
Just watching it.
You just knew it. Like, as soon as he let go of it. Right? Some guys will hold the bat, like, still have it with two hands, and it's kind of in the middle, and they start. His ended up just down on the ground. Like, he knew it right off the bat. This is gone. Absolutely love it. So he's, good. Yeah.
He's an absolute steal, by the way. If any of our listeners are MLB The Show fans out there, if you get him in MLB The Show, he is a steal. Such a good player in that game.
Absolutely. So that, yeah, that's a pretty cool one there. So good for Alex Gordon. And it raises the question, who else? Who are there any other guys on that team that you could see becoming members of the Royals Hall of Fame at some point? Obviously, Salvador Perez is going to be in the Royals Hall of Fame. But for guys like...
I mean, like Moose and Haas. Yeah, those guys...
Were they around long enough? I mean, were they with the team?
They came from the farm system. So they came up with the Royals. Homegrown kids. I mean, who's got better chance between those two? And then I'll add in the third one with does Billy Butler somehow get in there?
That's a really good question.
Billy Barbecue?
That's a good question. So Haas played 7 years in Kansas City, and in those 7 years, he went to an All-Star game once. He won a Silver Slugger Award once, and he won 4 Gold Gloves. So that's a pretty good stretch there. Of course,
we're forgetting Lo Kane as well.
Exactly. And that's Lo Kane was probably the best player on those teams.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, all around, his ability on the base paths, his fielding, his hitting, what he provided, I think he was the best player collectively on those Royals teams. But again, he was not around long. Like, he was a part of the Greinke trade in, what was that, 2010? 2011, and was gone in 2016. So I don't know.
Maybe LCD's Escobar.
Maybe.
I mean, he had a pretty solid tenure at shortstop there.
Do we give Johnny Cueto the nod for one singular postseason? Like just for that?
I don't think so.
Wade Davis, right? Do you give some credence to HDH? Put all three of them in at once. I don't know. I mean, Moose played a little bit longer in Kansas City. He played 8 years. He went to 2 All-Star games. And, of course, he had that 38 home run season in his last year in 2017 where the Royals ended up trading him to Milwaukee mid-year. I don't know. That's an interesting one. I really like the idea. I did not consider Billy Butler when I first posed that question. That's a fascinating one to me because he played almost his entire career. He probably played 10 years with the Royals. I guess he only played 8 years in Kansas City. And he went to 1 All-Star game, 1 Silver Slugger Award, had 127 home runs. Man, I don't know. But I feel like it can't just be Gordo and Salvi.
No.
Like, from that World Series, it can't just be those two guys.
I think, and here's the thing, you also give credence because they hadn't won it in over 30 years.
Yeah, it was exactly 30, 85 to 15.
Do you give it, I mean...
Just put the whole team in?
I mean, do you? I mean, obviously, the main guys. You do Moose, you do Haas, maybe you do Billy. You do Kane, you do Escobar. Everybody else was kind of a fill-in. You're not putting Omar Infante in, and you're not putting Rios in, you're not putting...
Hey, put some respect to my boy Paolo Orlando's name, all right? Yeah,
Paolo Orlando, for sure.
A little Terrence Gore, some Gerard Dyson.
Yeah.
Hey, that was a fun team, dude. That was a fun team to watch. That was my senior year of high school, and it was so much fun because they had been awful my entire life. I mean, I was born in 98. They were so bad. They were so bad that when I was a kid, growing up in my tiny little town in Kansas City, or in the metro, my tiny little small town, the cops in our town would drive around with boxes of packs of Royals baseball cards, and they would just give them to kids. They would just stop in front of your driveway, and the cop would hand you like 2 or 3 packs of Royals baseball cards because everybody collectively understood there is no world where people are paying money for these. And I bet I had 900 David DeJesus cards in my closet in my bedroom. And David DeJesus was fun to watch. I loved watching David DeJesus play. I loved watching Mike Sweeney play. I caught the tail end of Johnny Damon, right? And like certain guy, but Beltran and some of those guys. But it was so heartbreaking in that era because every time they found somebody, gone. drop of a hat, gone. Zach Greinke wins a Cy Young Award, gone a year later. Johnny Damon's an All-Star, gone a year later. Carlos Beltran, Rookie of the Year candidate, All-Star, Silver Slugger, gone. Joaquin Soria is the Reliever of the Year, gone.
And Jermaine
Dye? Yeah, Jermaine Dye. It just, you could, it never felt like you could get attached to these guys because they were gone. Except for some reason, David DeJesus and Mike Sweeney. Those guys always seemed to be around. Every year they would lose 100 games, but those two dudes were putting on a show for everybody that night. 913-586-7965. Put in Gomez, LOL. Somebody said, put in Johnny Gomes. Go for it. Put Johnny Gomes in the hall. For that, for his speech there alone at the parade, put him in there. So 785 says, does Joaquin Soria get in or not? I don't know. That's an interesting one. He was so good in Kansas City the first time around. He ended up going elsewhere. And then he kind of came back, which was interesting. I don't know. I feel like if you put Joaquin Soria in, then you got to put HDH in. You have to. I'm sorry. Like, that battery has got to go in. And I think if you put one of them in, you got to put all three of them in.
I think we've answered our question, Logan. Just throw them all in.
Just put the whole team.
Just the whole team's in.
Put the whole team in. Somebody asked, Greinke, does Greinke get in? Yeah, he won a Cy Young Award.
Yo, I think Greinke's definitely a Royals Hall of Famer.
I mean, like, and it's not going to happen, obviously. But I just want to pose a hypothetical, right? Because the Cy Young Award is like MVP for pitchers. Sometimes a pitcher wins MVP, but it's less and less likely nowadays. Say Bobby Witt Jr. won MVP this season, and next year, for some reason, they dealt him at the deadline. I know, doomsday scenario, don't think about it too long, because it's not going to happen. Does Bobby Witt Jr. then get into the Royals Hall of Fame in 15 or 20 years? Yes, because he won an MVP. Greinke won a Cy Young. He's one of only a handful of dudes who's ever done it. I think he will get in. Somebody said that that Billy Butler should get into the Hall of Fame based on his nickname alone. Said Country Breakfast is definitely in the nickname Hall of Fame. Big Country, baby.
Country Breakfast is hitting Billy Bombs left and right.
He was, I mean, a ton of doubles. For a dude with no speed, Billy Butler hit so many doubles. I could not believe how the amount of doubles that dude hit on a year-by-year basis.
You can thank Kauffman Stadium's dimensions for that one.
Yeah. He hit 276 doubles in 8 years with the Royals. 23-20. He hit 51 doubles in 09. Billy Butler had a three-year stretch where he hit 51 doubles, 45 doubles, 44 doubles. What? For a guy that has a total of 5 career stolen bases. 5 stolen bases, and he had 50 doubles in a single season.
And
all right,
snubbed,
make that make sense.
And he was snubbed for a home run derby.
He was. I mean, was that 2012? He hit like 30 that year. I think that was like his career high. He never hit a ton of home runs. Just a lot of quality amount of doubles. Always put it in the gaps. 913-586-7965 is our number. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of college basketball. That on the other side of this break. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber here with you. My producer, Blake Schneiders on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, if you're a college basketball fan, especially if you're a fan of a team that is, in your opinion, a contender for a national championship, I'd be a little panicked right now. I'd be a little scared. So Duke, battling North Carolina right now, no Cooper Flagg, right? Presumably one of the two favorites for the Naismith Basketball Player of the Year this year. Pretty much the ipso facto number one overall pick coming up in the 2025 NBA draft. He goes down with an injury yesterday in Duke's second round game at the ACC tournament. So he is not suited up tonight. So Duke is without their best player, arguably the best player in college basketball. They're taking on their biggest rivals in North Carolina, a team that is going to make the NCAA tournament, presumably. Duke is up 52-30. They were up 21 at halftime over a 20-win team in the ACC and their biggest rival without their best player. Tell you what, I am not a fan of a contending college basketball team. We'll talk about that later. I would be terrified right now if I'm Auburn or Tennessee or Florida, seeing what Duke is doing to North Carolina right now without Cooper Flagg. That is an astonishing performance that Blue Devils are putting on right now. Meanwhile, the 21st-ranked Mizzou Tigers are battling it out right now in a quarterfinal game in the SEC tournament against Florida. Here to bring us the latest is our producer, also Mizzou fan, Blake Schneiders. Blake, I understand it's not going great right now for the Tigers.
Yeah, so SEC quarterfinals here. Florida versus Mizzou, a 2 taking on a 7. Mizzou did not start hot. They were down 10-2 at our last update. They just are coming back from the second quarter, or from the second half right now in the 17th minute, but Mizzou has actually cut the lead down to 9. I think the largest lead that Florida had on them was 17. So they're still battling back. They've been kind of hovering around that 10 to 9 point range. We'll see if they started out the second half a little hotter. So we'll see if they can battle back, but it is definitely Florida's giving them a tough time right now.
With no Mark Mitchell on the floor, there is a lot more of Tamar Bates in the offensive game plan for Mizzou. He's put up 14 shots in this one. Second on the team right now, Caleb Grill with 6. So a lot of the offense is flowing through Tamar Bates. He's 6 of 14 from the floor. Tigers are not shooting the ball particularly well. They are 2 of 11 from behind the arc. Caleb Grill himself is 0 for 3 after he had a really poor offensive performance yesterday. And we were talking about this before the show, Blake, because you talked about Tony Perkins, who I'm very familiar with as an Iowa guy. He played for 4 years at Iowa and then transferred to Mizzou. He is quiet, relatively quiet tonight after he had a really good day yesterday. He's 2 for 3 with only 7 points. I don't know. So taking a look here on ESPN, Florida has ballooned the lead back out to 13 now. So if they're gonna do it, you got to do it soon. You don't want to be down double figures when you get to the under 8, or certainly not the under 4 timeout when things begin to get a little tighter. The crunch time becomes a little bit more tight. So this is an interesting one. Again, it's not one that I think has a tremendous impact. It's not going to push Mizzou down the seed line. I think Mizzou is firmly a 5 or a 6 seed right now. I think the only thing Mizzou can do is improve their seeding. If Mizzou were to beat Florida tonight and maybe win tomorrow too and get to a championship of the SEC tournament, maybe lose to Auburn in the SEC final, then maybe instead of being a 5-6, they're maybe a 4-5 in that respect. I think you go out and you win the SEC tournament, you might be a 4. So I don't know. But again, I don't think with a loss in this one tonight, Mizzou's not getting pushed down to the 6-7 seed line. That's not where I believe they are, especially with the amount of hype surrounding the SEC this year, with how highly ranked the league is as a whole. You swallow this one if you're Mizzou. You've had a great year. You beat Florida once in Gainesville at that. So take it with a grain of salt. You try to bounce back, get ready for the NCAA tournament, and hopefully Mark Mitchell is healthy and available to you by the time you get to Selection Sunday and the games early next week.
Grill just hit his first 3, by the way. Quick update.
Oh, good. So maybe the floodgates will open up for him. He's now 2 for 7, 1 of 4 from behind the arc. He's got 5 points. So Mizzou's going to need something from him sooner rather than later. All right. I'm going to go ahead and give the PSA now. I'm going to get on my soapbox here coming out. I've mentioned it a couple of times here already. I'm an Iowa basketball fan. Big news for the University of Iowa and the future of their basketball program that came out today. I want to discuss that a little bit coming up next, so bear with me. 913-586-7965 is our number. This is After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber, Blake Schneiders, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to go ahead and admit right now, this is kind of a me segment here. I just need to get it off my chest.
You have the floor, sir.
All right, I appreciate it. I have been a fan of Iowa athletics since 2005. I remember the exact day. New Year's Day, 2005, Tampa, Florida, Iowa football was matched up against LSU. Now, this was Nick Saban coached LSU. This was before he took the job with the Dolphins. They were fresh off of a national championship victory the previous year. Jamarcus Russell at quarterback, you know, future number two overall pick, one of the greatest busts in NFL history. And I was 5, 6, almost 7 years old at the time. And my grandfather, my dad's dad, had just passed away the previous year. And this was like one of the first holidays that my dad's side of the family was spending together since my grandfather had passed. So we were at my grandma and grandpa's house in Lawson, Missouri, the small town I grew up in. And of course, it's my parents, my younger brother, and my younger sister and I. My aunts and uncles had come down, my cousins and everything. And there's, you know, a bunch of us are sitting there at the house. And I was becoming a fan of sports at that time, right? 6, 7 years old, I was starting to kind of understand what sports was about. But I wasn't completely sold. Like, I didn't really have a favorite team. I was just a fan of whoever my parents were rooting for on TV. I was a Mizzou fan. I was an Iowa fan. I just, whatever was on TV, I picked a team and I rooted for that team. But that day, Iowa threw a Hail Mary as time expired. Drew Tate hit Warren Holloway, which if you look it up, that's Warren Holloway's only career college receiving touchdown ever. As time expired to beat LSU, Drew Tate, Iowa starting quarterback, throws his helmet down and starts running across the field. And I vividly remember watching that live at 6 years old, and that was the day that I fell in love with sports. That was it for me. And so fast forward to today, 15 years in, Iowa has announced that they are, right, the phrase they use now is parting ways. They have parted ways with Fran McCaffrey. Just say you fired him. You fired him. We all know you fired him. Stop trying to sugarcoat it for everybody else. I don't know who that phrase is for. Fran McCaffrey knows you fired him. You know you fired him. We know he got fired. Just say he got fired. Anyway, after 15 years in the gig, Fran McCaffrey has officially been shown the door. And I have opinions about this. Firstly, do I think this is the right move for the future of Iowa basketball? Yes, I do. And I hate saying that because I am a big Fran McCaffrey fan. For the biggest reason of all being, he was a dude who defended his players. I don't know if you ever watched an Iowa basketball game. You might have thought that man was certifiably insane. Like, he looked like he should be institutionalized because he was constantly yelling and berating officials. His face would get super red. Iowa fans created a DEFCON system known as FranCon, and based on the coloration of his face is how you knew how angry he was in that moment. It was a real thing. But he went to bat for his guys, man. He was a true player's coach. And Iowa had some good years during the time that he was there. He got the job in 2010 as Iowa was coming off of the worst 3-year stretch in sports in Iowa basketball history. Under Todd Licklider, they were awful. They were horrendous. And he comes in, takes the program from the lowest possible depths that it had been in, and he took him to 7 NCAA tournaments in 15 years, which I know for some fan bases doesn't sound like a lot, but you have to think about the fact that Iowa basketball hasn't been to a Sweet 16 in 30 years. They haven't been to a Final Four since 1980. So this is not a program with a ton of pedigree to begin with. And so for him to take them to an NCAA tournament nearly every other year that he was the head coach, it's pretty good. They never got to a Sweet 16. In those seven appearances in the NCAA tournament, they got to the round of 32 four times. And so he probably outperformed the expectations for the Iowa basketball program during his tenure. And he brought in some gems, dude. I mean, he recruited Luka Garza, who was just this sort of awkward, gangly 6'11 dude who nobody really thought much of from you know, the D.C. area, and turned him into a National Player of the Year. He took the Murray twins, Keegan and Chris Murray, guys who were unranked, zero-star prospects from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, who went and played a year of post-grad basketball, and wound up turning both of those guys into first-round picks in the NBA. Keegan especially, he was the fourth overall pick a couple of years ago to the Kings. He took underrated or unrated guys and turned them into certifiable all-Big Ten NBA-type players. But with some of those guys on those rosters, they couldn't get a win. They couldn't get to the second weekend. I mean, there was a year there. I believe it was the 2020-2021 season. That was Luka Garza's senior year. They had Jordan Bohannon, who is still college basketball's all-time leader in made three-pointers. Just throwing that detail out there. And the Murray twins. You had three NBA players on that roster. And they got beat like they stole something by Oregon in the round of 32 that year. They were preseason top five in the country, and they only won 22 games. So he exceeded expectations in a lot of respects, but when the expectations ever were risen to a level higher than make the NCAA tournament, like when you got three NBA guys on your roster, two of them being first round picks, you should probably get to the second weekend. When you're a preseason top five team, the expectation is not just to get to the tournament, not just to get to the second weekend, get to an Elite Eight, get to a Final Four. And they just never did it. And I look around at some of the candidates, quote unquote, for the job, and I think this is as good a time for Iowa basketball to look elsewhere as they could possibly have. Darian DeVries, who is at West Virginia now, is an Iowa guy, born and raised in the state of Iowa. He's at West Virginia now, but prior to getting the West Virginia job, he was at Drake for years and years and years. And there is reports coming out of Morgantown that he has hesitated to sign an extension at West Virginia because he was waiting to hear on what was going on with the Iowa job. And I think he'd be a great fit. His son, Tucker, is a phenomenal player. And I think it'd be fun to watch in Iowa City. And then you've got Ben McCollum, which, of course, admittedly, I am very excited about that possibility because Ben McCollum coached at Northwest Missouri State, where I went to school. And I developed a relationship with Coach McCollum while I was at Northwest. I worked for the athletic department. I, of course, covered Northwest athletics in my capacity as a radio person and as a writer when I was in college. So, and all I've seen that man do is have success. In the 4 years that I was in college at Northwest, they won three national championships. It was astonishing. It was remarkable, the level of success that he had. And then, you know, to see him go to Drake this year and see that Drake team with almost an entirely new roster, a ton of those guys followed him from Northwest to Drake, from D2 to the Missouri Valley Conference, which is a really good mid-major league, and go 29-3 to sweep the regular season and conference tournament championships in the Valley in year one with outside of four or five guys from Northwest, pretty much an entirely new roster of guys that from what had been at Drake the previous year. I mean, just insane what he was able to accomplish. And he's, again, an Iowa guy who is coaching at Drake. It's an easy stepping stone job. It makes sense. So am I sad to see the Fran McCaffrey era end at Iowa? Yes, absolutely I am. But I think that it was a matter of time. It was time. It was probably time. And I hate saying that because I was 11 years old when he got hired, and Iowa basketball was buried underneath the dumpster fire. Like, that's how bad they were. And now they're not a national championship contender. They're not a team you're shaking in your boots to play in the round of 32. But they're a competitive basketball team. They're a team that, for the most part, from 2012 to today, they had only finished below 500 in the Big Ten twice. 8 out of 10 years. It's a pretty good run for Fran McCaffrey. So sad to see him go, but I think that it was the right move for the betterment and the future of the program. And with that, I'll get off my soapbox. 913-586-7965. Somebody in the text line said, I think it's whack that Iowa fired Fran McCaffrey. He has done a lot of good there, I think. My wife side's from Johnston, so they are big Iowa and Iowa State fans. Curious how that works. How is some of your wife's family Iowa fans and some of them Iowa State fans? More importantly, how can they be around each other in the same room? I'm not sure I could do it. Most of my entire family is from Iowa, and they are all Iowa fans, all of them. I do not have an Iowa State fan in my family. I have family members that went to Iowa State who are still Iowa fans. They do not even root for the school they went to, just weird. But that, hey, man, that's the state of Iowa. ZC says, being from Lawson, do you know the Porse, the Moores, or the Reasons? Yes, I know all three of those families. Come on, man. Lawson, Missouri, it's a town of 2,500 people. If that family lived in Lawson when I was going through school, I absolutely know who they are. And I know all of them. And they are very, very good people. All right. We're getting off the Iowa soapbox. I promise. I promise we're not going to talk about it anymore. What I do want to talk about is the Dallas Cowboys. Well, I should say a couple of Dallas Cowboys and one former Cowboys player are in a bit of a tizzy on social media. They are having beef, and I want to get into the details of it. We'll talk about that next here on After Hours. Logan Weber here with you, my producer for tonight, Blake Schneiders. This is 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Man, and they say there's nothing fun about Cowboys football anymore. Boy, the Cowboys keep it entertaining, let me tell you. Maybe not on the football field, maybe not between the lines necessarily, but there's always something going on in Dallas, baby. And this one is happening across on social media in front of God and everybody. Nope, this isn't in a private setting. This isn't in the locker room. This isn't in the facility. Nope. We're just going to get on our phones. We're going to talk trash in front of our screens. That's what's going on right now between DeMarcus Lawrence and most notably Micah Parsons. Now, I've also seen several other Cowboys, current or former, getting involved. Like, I saw former Cowboys safety Jordan Lewis got involved. Chauncey Golston, who is a defensive lineman for the Cowboys, he just sort of was like reacting to it, sort of like a guy watching a ping pong game going on. He was just very interested in the back and forth, but didn't really get involved. Now, the whole thing stems from DeMarcus Lawrence signing a free agent deal with the Seattle Seahawks. So he goes from Dallas to Seattle, and apparently some Seahawks blogger was interviewing DeMarcus Lawrence. And Lawrence said in this interview, and I quote, "A change in scenery is always good, but Dallas is my home. I made my home there. My family lives there. I'm forever going to be there, but I know for sure I'm not going to win a Super Bowl there. So yeah, we hear. First of all, that's a wild approach to say, I was never going to win a title in Dallas. That's why I'm leaving. But when I retire, I'm going to live in Dallas for the rest of my life. How do you think that's going to go over? How do you think the Weed and Boys crowd is going to respond to you being like, yeah, I had to leave Dallas. We weren't going to win anything. And then you just like being in your late 30s post-retirement, just like walking in, you know, bumping into them at a Whole Foods. You think people are going to be receptive to that, Dexter or DeMarcus? I'm not too sure, man. Apparently, though, this immediately got Micah Parsons riled up. So Micah Parsons responds with, this is what rejection and envy look like. This, some clown bleep. Starts with an S, you fill out the rest. And then Dexter Lawrence? He's a defensive lineman for the Giants. DeMarcus Lawrence then responds back to Micah Parsons on Twitter. He says, quote, calling me a clown won't change the fact that I told the truth. Maybe if you spent less time tweeting and more time winning, I wouldn't have left. Ooh. Should have led with less time podcasting. I don't know if you've heard that podcast he did with CJ Stroud. It's entertaining, but it's like, what are you two doing here? Don't you have other things to do?
I tell you what, they're no Kelce brothers.
They are not. No, it's like, you've been here for 5 minutes. Like, Micah Parsons is a phenomenal football player. CJ Stroud's a great football player. Stroud just finished year two, and Micah just finished year four. It's like, yeah, Travis and Jason can have a podcast together because they've got 25 combined years of experience in the National Football League. They know what it takes, and they've shown that they can do what it takes and win at the highest level and still do it.
And at the same time, having all those accolades, they can be entertaining.
Yes.
I mean, how's Tyreek Hill's podcast going, by the way? I understand.
I was completely unaware that that man even had a podcast.
Oh, yeah, he does. I'm pretty sure he gets about 20 listens a week, but it's. I don't like when these players just like, hey, brand awareness. I'm working on my brand too, man. I got to make sure people know who I am. Yeah, we know who you are because you play football. I don't need to hear you talk about things that probably don't matter because most of you don't know how to be entertaining. Most of you can't be on the mic. Like I said, the Kelces are different because they both know how to be entertaining. Hell, his brother works as an analyst, so he knows how to be on TV. Mm-hmm. Travis obviously does his thing, but they didn't do that until they were towards the twilight of their careers.
Right.
So they've got more things to talk about. They know how to talk about different scenarios and stories, and they've got accolades to really give them credit. Micah Parsons, why would I want to listen to you?
Yeah, I don't know.
What are you really going to tell me about? Are you going to give me some juicy insides in the locker room? Probably not. I guarantee Jerry Jones is going to slap that down as fast as he can.
Yeah, apparently not. Because, I mean, this back and forth between DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons, this does not feel like something that just happened. Like, in my view.
Oh, it's been brewing, I think.
This feels like these two guys have not liked each other for quite some time. Like, this just feels like a public spat after years of private spats. So that's an interesting one. Somebody said, L-Dub, that's funny because he wants to win a Super Bowl in Seattle. Yeah, he's not going to win one in Seattle either. All right, I'm going to make a joke here. I don't know if it's going to hit or not, but I'm going to give it a shot. I'll say I did not know that Tyreek Hill had a podcast. But now that I'm thinking about a Tyreek Hill podcast, the only thing I can imagine is just an hour once a week of Tyreek Hill bringing Maury Povich onto his show and just declaring, is he the father or not the father? That's all it is. It's just Tyreek Hill guest starring Maury Povich telling Tyreek if that's his baby or not. That's all I picture. 913-586-7965 is our number. 1 hour coming up here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us, listen to the Powers That Be, wherever you get your podcasts.